submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Village of Schaumburg against Citizens. Siegel, I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case involves one question, the question of whether the First and the 14th Amendments invalidates the provisions of Section 20, paren G, of Chapter 22 of the Schaumburg Village Code. These sections require that as a condition to receive a permit for charitable solicitation within the village, there must be presented a certified audit or other comparable evidence that 75% of the proceeds will be used directly for the charitable purposes of the organization seeking to solicit. The ordinance covers both door-to-door solicitation and the use of public streets and public ways within the village. The district court held that specific provision and that specific provision alone to be unconstitutional on its face. The action was initiated by a declaratory judgment action brought by the Citizens for a Better Environment, an allegedly environmental group that sought a permit and complied with all other requirements of the ordinance except the 75% provision. On appeal, the Seventh Circuit held that the ordinance was not necessarily unconstitutional on its face as applied to what the Court said was the more traditional form of charitable organization, but nevertheless sustained a summary judgment and held that the statute in question, the ordinance in question, was unconstitutional when applied to an organization which allegedly was involved in the dissemination of information and political discussion. Our position here, Your Honors, is first that the ordinance is not unconstitutional on its face, is not unconstitutional as applied. At the very least, we suggest
the posture of the case now, we take it that these distributions do involve the dissemination of information.
Your Honor, that's a question that remains to be a...
You said there was summary judgment.
There was a summary judgment.
And the Court acted on the pleadings?
The Court acted on the pleadings.
That's alleged in the pleadings?
It's alleged in the pleadings, Your Honor, and it's denied in our answer. And we allege as affirmative defenses the fact that a substantial portion of the funds, in fact, go to the solicitors and to the organizers of the group. And we suggest that summary judgment was improperly granted. And we think that it's apparent from the Seventh Circuit's opinion that the Seventh Circuit had great problem with this issue. It, in effect, held that this ordinance was not unconstitutional on its face, but was unconstitutional as applied. And yet we suggest that that court could not have reached that conclusion without some evidence. The only affidavits in support of the motion were the very skeleton affidavits which appear at page 40 and 43 of the appendix. These affidavits, in essence, say that this organization is created under the laws of Illinois, that it's a not-for-profit organization, that they maintain a group of solicitors, and that they go from door to door and they give out environmental information and take complaints.
Mr. Siegel, is this ordinance typical of villages in northern Illinois?
No, sir, it is not. This case was initiated by the CBE against 22 villages and cities in Illinois. Judge Marshall at the district level sustained summary judgments on a number of ordinances, most of which simply required a permit and left discretion with either the police department or the village board. Our ordinance, we believe, is substantially different from the other ordinances in question because it does not vest any discretion in administrative officers. It sets forth what we believe to be definite standards guiding the issuance of a permit, and if the applicant meets all the requirements of the permit, the village is required to issue a permit, and that is uncontested. Both the trial court and the Court of Appeals treated the ordinance as, in fact, a mandatory requirement if all the conditions were met.
What about drives by national organizations like Boy Scouts,
I believe, Your Honor,
Red Cross and the like, are they subject to this ordinance?
Yes, they are. And I indicated in my reply brief the substantial number of national organizations that have, in fact, complied with this ordinance.
So that they have met the 75%
yes,
requirement?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Would your argument be any different if it were 90%?
I think it's a question of reasonableness. I think the Fort Worth case, which held an 80% requirement valid, indicates that it's a question of reasonableness. We view this, Your Honor, as not an attack on freedom of speech at all, but as a police power regulation in which the local community has made a determination that in order to protect its citizens both from physical danger, if you will, from annoyance and from disturbance in their homes, but also from what we could loosely refer to as fraud, that we have the right to require that when a charitable organization comes into town and says it is soliciting for charity, that in fact it devotes a substantial portion of their funds to charity.
Mr. Siegel, how would this ordinance operate? And I'm asking just as a matter of information. If the sole charitable purpose of the organization were to advertise the plight of the American Indian or to buy advertising in periodicals lamenting the plight of the Vietnam refugee or whatever, and that was its sole and a charitable purpose, and then 100% of its funds, net funds, would be used for advertising, and yet you have to deduct advertising expenses under this ordinance, as I understand it, before you count the 75%.
Well, Your Honor, I think if the sole purpose was advertising,
yes,
then the ordinance would permit solicitation.
It doesn't say so. It doesn't seem to say so.
Well, I don't. I think, Your Honor, first of all, that it does say so. I think the section of the...
Well, it says it's 20G of Chapter 22 of the Village, subsection 2, requires the deduction of advertising expenses before... 75% is figured.
I take it that's advertising in conjunction with the solicitation.
It would not cover, are you suggesting, it would not cover advertising that was directed at public education? Is that your point?
If the only use of the funds was for public education, and that was the charitable purpose, whether it be advertising, yes, in a broad sense, certainly.
Because that's what advertising expenses is what the ordinance says.
That's correct, but the advertising expenses go to the operation of the solicitation, Your Honor. If the sole objective of the organization was advertising, then 100% of the proceeds would go to the charitable purpose for which it was organized.
Your submission is that administrative expenses of the organization, including but not limited to advertising.
That's correct. Right. We're talking about...
That therefore administrative expenses of the organization limits the term
advertising
expense.
Absolutely.
Your ordinance also requires license for for-profit solicitation,
yes,
doesn't
sir.
It?
That's a different subsection of the chapter of the municipal code.
And then did the respondents here ever apply under that section?
No, sir, they did not.
Has it ever been interpreted by the Illinois courts?
This particular ordinance? No, it hasn't. I cited in my brief the case of Scott versus Police Hall of Fame, which interpreted or at least passed upon the Illinois Charitable Solicitation Act, the statute. In that act, there is a 75% requirement in which the charitable organization is permitted to deduct the cost of solicitation before it arrives at 75% figure. That statute was attacked on the grounds that it invaded the First Amendment, that the 75% requirement, regardless of how you calculate it, was an infringement of the First Amendment, presumably based on the theory that anything that they did in the course of collections was immune because of the First Amendment. In the appellate court, which is not obviously the Supreme Court, held that there was no violation of the First Amendment by putting that 75%.
Did either party request the district court to abstain so that the state courts could engage in some of these constructions of the ordinance?
No, sir. This case was brought by the CBE in the federal court. To the best of my knowledge, the state court has never been asked to pass upon this kind of ordinance. The CBE has been active, as they say in their brief, in a number of federal cases. Our position, of course, is that this is a matter which is peculiarly susceptible to local determination. We do not believe that this is really a First Amendment case. This is a police power case.
And well, but certainly there are constitutional cases from this court saying that you can't lodge total discretion in the power in the chief of police to issue ordinances and things like that.
That's right.
But my thought was that the constitutional result may be entwined with how you interpret your own ordinance, and that is something that is the province of the state court.
I would suggest that as the case, Your Honor. I did not suggest it. They filed a motion for summary judgment the same day they filed their amended complaint. I was given 15 days in which to answer both, and it happened very rapidly. There was no discovery. There was no nothing in this case. I think the record is very bare. As I suggest in my argument, that summary judgment is totally inappropriate based upon this record.
Isn't it, I take it from reading this ordinance that it wouldn't apply at all to an organization that came in and said, we want to go door to door, but we aren't the least bit interested in raising any money. We just never solicit contributions.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you could go door to door and put out the word about the environment or anything else as much as you wanted without any permit.
That's absolutely right.
It applies only to the act of raising money.
That's right, Your Honor.
What about door to door if they were going to urge people to vote for James Johnson for city councilman and ask for a contribution to his campaign?
I would suppose it would apply because that's what
I think it would apply. I think it would apply. I think that was sort of what Hines versus Oradell was.
How do you measure the 75% then? All of it, the entire solicitation is for the purpose of electing James Johnson.
I would say that they would meet the requirement. If they had paid solicitors, which is admitted in this case, if they said, we want to elect James Johnson, give us $10, we'll keep the $5 for ourselves and we'll give $5 to James Johnson. That's the sort of thing that this ordinance is intended to prevent, because we recognize that there is a very serious problem. At least there was in Schaumburg, of people knocking on the doors at all hours of day and night. And Your Honor, in the Hines case, said that there's no constitutional right to knock on anybody's door on private premises. We feel the legislative body made the determination that when all the funds go to a charitable purpose, we are willing, particularly in the light of the other requirements, to permit this invasion into the privacy and the possible threat of our householders. But when organizations parade themselves in the mantle of charity and in fact have an undisclosed amount going directly to the people who solicit the funds rather than for the charitable purpose, then we have the right, as this court has said over and over again, I think going back to Cantwell, going back to Martin, certainly in Hines, indicating that these are very important public rights that the municipal government has full power to preserve. As I indicate over and over again in my brief, I think the closest case before the Court of Appeals decision in this one was that Fort Worth case in 1969 in the Fifth Circuit, where the Court of Appeals there said that a municipality can deny permission to solicit if the cost of solicitation is excessive. And they, relying upon cases which predated Hines, actually recognized this court's view that this was an important municipal interest. So our position, Your Honors, is simply that this is not a case of prior restraint. It's not a case of interference with freedom of speech. We have no desire to keep CBE or anybody else from spreading the message. Our desire, and we think this ordinance is a carefully drawn, and it's a clear ordinance. Our desire is simply to protect our householders from the problems of invasion of privacy, from fraud, if you will, from misrepresentation, and to preserve what we feel is very important, constitutional right, perhaps almost as important as the First Amendment, that is the right to be left alone. I think that in Hines, this court quoted Professor Chafee writing back in 1945, where he indicated that this was the least likely type of expression to receive protection under the First Amendment.
Why would it be just as effective if those are your aims to require anybody who wants to raise money from any of your citizens to have written down on a little card what percentage of its budget it spends for this, that, or the other thing? And let the householder make up his mind whether that makes sense.
It might be. It might be even more effective. But I don't believe that that's the issue. I think the issue is, has the local government, which has made this decision, infringed upon the First Amendment? I can think of perhaps a dozen.
Do you think that raising money, purely raising money, is in any case within the protection of the First Amendment? You think there are any First Amendment considerations here at all if all you're talking about is the pure solicitation of money?
I think, frankly, Your Honor, that this is probably not a First Amendment case. In reading the decisions, I find no decision.
Do you have some opinions and cases in this court to contend with?
The cases, Your Honor, that we have to contend with.
Religious organizations going around asking for contributions and selling a piece of literature?
Well, Your Honor, all...
They do is sell and raise money.
All these... The religious cases, Your Honor, and those obviously, Schneider versus Irvington and Martin versus Struthers, beginning with the Jehovah's Witnesses cases, all involve door-to-door solicitation by people who denote themselves as evangelists or missionaries.
Clear in those cases that they were doing something besides raising money at the same time?
Yes, I think it is.
Spreading the gospel?
I think they were spreading the gospel. They felt that this was part and parcel of their religious function. And I think that's an entirely different situation. I think that the religion cases, although they certainly give us guidance, are not determinative of the issues here. Because very, very frankly, we believe that we are engaged much more in the question of limitations on commercial speech.
Well, I thought the Citizens for a Better Environment said that was precisely what they were doing here. Spreading information about environmental developments.
Well, Your Honor.
Well, they could do that without a license.
They could do that without a license.
Yes.
It's the question of collecting the money that brings them within the purview of our ordinance.
But they were doing both.
They were doing both. And we were denied the opportunity to inquire into just what they were in fact doing. I trust that Your Honors will look at the affidavits on page 40 and 43. Perhaps look at that district court case, the Smith case, where they say that major constitutional questions should not be decided on motions for summary judgment, but the record should be fleshed out. And we were prepared to flesh out the record. We were prepared to show the substantial number of organizations, only a portion of which I've listed in my reply brief, who operate very efficiently under our ordinance. I think, Your Honors, that there are certain basic constitutional propositions which are dispositive of the case here. First of all, we believe that Hines versus Ordell holds that there is no right under the Constitution to knock on a private person's door for any purpose. We believe there is no constitutional right to make public solicitation of funds for charity. And I cite the National Foundation versus City of Fort Worth. We believe, both under the National Foundation case and actually implicit in the opinion of the Court of Appeals in this case, that a municipality can deny permission to solicit if the cost of solicitation is excessive. I think the court below in this case recognized that. And this court in Hines versus Ordell, citing Martin versus Struthers, citing Cantwell, said that there are important municipal interests at stake, and these include protection of fraud, peaceful enjoyment of one's home, and prevention of crime. Also, this court has always held that time, place, and manner, even assuming the exercise of a First Amendment right, is critical. The nature of the forum is important. The right of privacy in the home is to be protected. And, of course, in the Lehman versus City of Shaker Heights, both the majority opinion and the concurring opinion are heavily weighted toward the fact that no one should be subjected to unasked-for bombardments of voices or conversation or music or anything under the guise of the First Amendment.
Well, except this ordinance doesn't, at least by its terms, direct itself to protecting the privacy of homeowners and lessees, but rather with a solicitation of funds. It doesn't purport to prevent, as my brother White suggested, all sorts of visitations.
That's correct.
To householders in an effort to propagandize them to one,
Your Honor,
one respect or another.
We were not unmindful of the First Amendment. We made a definite choice. We perhaps could draft an ordinance, although we made no attempt to do so, that would have prevented all kinds of disturbances. That wasn't the intent.
No.
There was a legislative intent here to limit the solicitations in a manner which we felt did not impinge upon freedom of speech.
Right.
That when the, if you will, quasi-commercial character of raising money became involved, then we felt we were engaged in a proper exercise of the police power.
And that was its purpose, was to protect the citizenry from some sort of species of fraud, not in the technical sense, but of paying out their money, thinking it was going to a cause, a worthy cause, and
exactly
more,
right.
More than 25% of it was not going to that cause.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's different from protecting the privacy of householders.
Well, I think that there are two or three different bases which are served by this type of ordinance. One, and these are coupled together in the cases, from Cantwell on down, fraud, misrepresentation, privacy, crime. The litany is recited in all these cases because these are fundamental aspects of the police power, which the municipalities have always been held to have the power. Now, it happens in Illinois that towns over 25,000, such as Schaumburg, are home rule, and we get our home rule police power directly from the Constitution. So we didn't have to go through the intermediate question of whether there's a statute, and we do have the authority to regulate and to enact ordinances in any area where the General Assembly has the authority, and there's no question that the regulation of charity is in fact a proper exercise of the state's police power.
Mr. Siegel, is there anything in the record or the ordinance itself to explain how the Village Fathers came up with the figure 75%?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I can tell you how, because I drafted the ordinance. We looked at the state statute with the 75% restriction.
Is it the same restriction?
No, it is not. There's a 75% number in the state statute,
right,
but the formula is different. They are allowed to deduct the cost of solicitation.
Which your ordinance does not
allow. Our ordinance specifically does not permit that.
So you keep people out that the state would regard as
proper
charities.
That's correct. And we do it because we feel that the state statute, while a step in the right direction, permits the kind of solicitation which CBE apparently is involved in, and we really don't know because we never tried it.
But what did you know at the time you fixed the 75%?
How
did you know you wouldn't be interfering with legitimate solicitation activities?
Well, first of all, I did a little research, and I came up with the Fort Worth case, where the court had held 80%. And I felt that at that time, that was the...
You want to get the highest figure you could get?
No, we didn't. We could have taken 80%. We took 75%. Based on Fort Worth, we could have taken 80. But that, to my mind, that opinion...
And if Fort Worth had been 100, you could have taken 95.
Well, perhaps we would have. I think if Fort Worth had said that there was an absolute bar, we might have considered that. But it didn't say that, and this court denied cert, so we assumed that for at that time at least, there was a settled federal court of appeals case, the only one we were able to find on this particular subject. And we had a state statute which recognized that a 75% cutoff was a reasonable cutoff as between what is administrative and what is otherwise. That none of that's in the record, but this is the kind of thinking which went into the drafting of the ordinance and the legislative determination, which we think is peculiarly the province of the local government and not necessarily for the federal courts. I would, Mr. Chief Justice, if I may, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Mr. Shador?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the counsel has told us that he drafted the ordinance that's at issue in this case, but I would submit with respect that what counsel is seeking to do here is to write a new ordinance and to make a new record from the one that's before this Court. This case comes to the Court on a summary judgment. The summary judgment is not based on pleadings. The summary judgment is based, as is quite proper, on affidavits. We had both a sworn complaint and supporting affidavits, and those contained very specific references to precisely the kind of activity that was involved here with Citizens for a Better Environment. What Citizens for a Better Environment concededly does on this record is to employ canvassers who are engaged in door-to-door activity in the metropolitan area, who distribute literature on environmental topics and answer questions of an environmental nature when posed, solicit contributions to financially support the organization and its program. Like traditional charities, this organization does not survive on air, although it deals with air. One of its purposes, if it's going to disseminate literature, is that it has to have funds with which to do it.
Suppose the ordinance prohibited all solicitations for funds entirely. Do you think it would be unconstitutional?
Your Honor, it would be unconstitutional as applied to organizations that require the obtaining of funds in order to exercise First Amendment rights.
Well, they all.
And that's
Can you
precisely.
Think of any organization that would not require funds?
Your Honor,
that?
I would. I think that perhaps, although I can't read the mind of the Seventh Circuit, I think that perhaps the reference to the traditional form of charitable organization as distinct from the kind here that is directly involved in programmatic activity is the possibility that the fundraising for charities alone may not carry with it, and I don't perceive the specific example, but could not necessarily carry with it the desire to communicate ideas. I would think that the traditional charities are subject to the same provisions, that is, that the American Cancer Society, which wants to educate the public on issues of cancer and needs funds in order to do that, would also be in a position to attack the ordinance that Your Honor suggests as unconstitutional.
An ordinance says a city doesn't say you can't canvass and spread your ideas. You can spread them all you want to. But it says you just can't raise money door to door. Raise it any other way, by the mail or by meetings. Do it any way you want to. But just stay away from doors in raising money. Now, you say that's unconstitutional.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that just staying away from my door, to quote the old song, is really inappropriate in light of the decisions of this Court. It's been true for at least 40 years since...
But it wouldn't be unconstitutional to say, stay away from all the doors that have signs on them, stay away.
That's correct, Your Honor. The reason that it would not be unconstitutional is that that places the judgment exactly where this court says that it should be. It places that judgment in the individual householder and not in the community. The community is not in a position to make a collective judgment for everyone that may be very different from what the individual judgment
is. Do you have any cases that say that raising money is speech?
Not raising money alone, but raising money for purposes...
Well, now you're changing my question.
No, Your Honor, I do not.
Well, the only thing this ordinance applies to is the raising of money.
But,
and
Your Honor...
And it doesn't prevent spreading the word. Where is the authority for the fact that raising money is speech?
Beginning with this court's decision in Martin against Struthers, for example, when we're dealing with the raising of money.
Tell me any one of those cases that involved only solicitation. In those cases, if you wanted to go around and canvass or solicit, you had to get a license.
But Your Honor, if the organization were raising money for the sake of raising money, then you would be dealing with a for-profit organization. The for-profit organization that may not be engaged in communication would have no protection by the First Amendment. But the organization that raises money for its purposes being the charitable purposes, which is what this ordinance talks about, and those, after all, that's precisely what the ordinance is directed at, the raising of money
for charitable purposes. Could you forbid the people trying to sell magazines from door to door?
Your Honor, the magazine sales from door to door, which are the strictly commercial speech under Breard against Alexandria, we had a case that dealt with that.
Can you prevent the selling of stocks from door to door? Securities?
Your Honor, I would suggest that's a case that's not before this court. What the Village of Schaumburg might have done with an ordinance...
The case before the court is an ordinance that forbids only solicitation for money. Talk about that.
I am, Your Honor. It forbids solicitation for money by charitable organizations, and it's being attacked by an organization that wants to solicit those funds to permit it to engage in First Amendment rights.
What, Mr. Shador, if the ordinance, instead of requiring satisfactory proof that at least 75% of the proceeds of the solicitations will be used for the charitable purposes, said that before issuing a license, it would require satisfactory proof that at least some of the proceeds of such solicitations would be used for the charitable purposes.
Your Honor, if we were dealing with a requirement that dealt directly with the question of bona fides, which is what that ordinance would deal with, that is, that at least 1%, at least some of the funds are used, under those circumstances, the community could seek to justify the ordinance as a means of preventing fraud. But I would call Your Honor's attention to
one of the basis on which the ordinance is sought to be justified here.
Your Honor, let me, however, give you the
example. So is the argument about the 75%?
No, Your Honor, it is not. Take the organization that's just starting up, the organization that by definition has to use all of its initial funds for administrative functions to permit it in that first year. That's an example that's given by one of the amici here. Mm-hmm. The organization that in its first year, in order to get itself started on what is conceitedly a charitable purpose, must nevertheless use those initial funds for purposes of getting itself geared up.
So in short, if instead of 75%, the ordinance said at least some, it would be equally invalid.
On overbreadth grounds, although that's not the problem that we have, because our record is a better one.
I just thought it's violating the First and 14th Amendments.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what I meant by overbreadth grounds, First Amendment. Let me return to what we're dealing with here in terms of the organization and what this ordinance seeks to do. This ordinance characterizes charitable purpose in a sort of extraordinary way, because it doesn't say charitable purpose in a way that, for example, the state statute deals with. It characterizes charitable purpose, and nowhere in counsel's reply brief or anywhere else has this been denied. as applying to all salaries or commissions that are paid to canvassers, even though, on the uncontradicted record, there are people who, in addition to soliciting funds, exercise rights that are First Amendment rights. It excludes all other salaries, yet this is an organization, an environmental organization, that has on its staff and has to pay for an in-house research staff, an expert on nuclear power, a physicist, a biochemist, a geneticist. All those funds that are used for that purpose are part of the prohibited 25% and not part of the permitted 75%. Lawyers' fees are characterized as part of the non-permitted amount. Yet the organization that's involved in environmental activities, by definition, is constantly dealing with the structure of the environment. That means dealing with the government, dealing with the private utilities, and it has to engage in enforcement activities.
Mr. Schrader, could your client have gotten a license under Article 2 rather than Article 1?
Your Honor, our organization is not a for-profit organization, but in response to your question, if our organization had to cope with the provisions of Article 2, then we would read directly, as the patent lawyers would have it, on the cases that this court has dealt with early in these areas, and that is saying that giving discretion to the public officials is not permitted, because the second portion of this ordinance provides, and I'm reading now from record pages, page 19 in the appendix, when the chief of police makes or causes to be made an investigation to determine the character and reputation of the applicant, and that no license shall be issued to an applicant who is not found to be a person of good character and reputation, or to any firm, corporation, partnership, or association. Under those circumstances, what happens is that power is vested in the municipal official to make that kind of determination, and the decisions of this court say that that's not permitted.
Well, you say, in effect, then there's no way that a municipal corporation can accomplish the result that they want to accomplish here. They can't do it by lodging discretion in the chief of police, and they can't do it by the objective profile that they've attempted to do under Article 1. You're saying, in effect, the people can come around and solicit money, and that there's simply nothing they can do about it.
Well, no, Your Honor, I haven't said that at all.
Well, that's what amounts
to. No, Your Honor. There are statutes that deal with fraud. Indeed, other sections of this ordinance deal with fraud. There are sections, there are provisions under which trespass can be forbidden, and indeed are. If the purposes that are sought to be served by the village in this case are indeed, as they proclaim, the prevention of fraud and the preservation of privacy, there are adequate legal means to enable them to do that without creating the bed of Procrustes that's set up by this 75%
standard. Tell us what some of those methods are.
A provision in the ordinance that prohibits trespass, that precludes people from coming on to the premises of homeowners who have indicated that they don't want to be bothered.
By posting
or otherwise. Yes, Your Honor.
What if the village council held a hearing at which a due notice was given and said that we have reason to believe that CBE has engaged in fraudulent representations within this village, and we're here to determine that, and if we do determine it, we're going to bar them from soliciting in this town.
As a precondition to permitting CBE to solicit?
No. Suppose that only that they allow them to solicit until the hearing was over.
And then we had a hearing as to fraud. I would suggest that a finding of fraud in that kind of situation would be permitted to preclude fraudulent activity. That's what our laws about fraud deal with. But what's wrong here is that that's very different from this case. What is done here is to create a sort of conclusive line that says 75.1 is not fraudulent, 74.9 is fraudulent, and in which the standards that are employed in going to those percentages, it has no relationship at all to the concept of fraud. There's nothing in the activities that Citizens for a Better Environment is engaged in, as established by the record in this case, by these affidavits, that goes into the prohibited side of it that constitutes fraudulent activity. All of these things serve the direct First Amendment rights and serve the functions of the public as well. We're dealing with both sides of the coin.
What if the solicitors for CBC take the money they've raised in 2 weeks of soliciting and just take a trip to the Caribbean?
In that case, Your Honor, there are statutes that permit that. Indeed, it was precisely that kind of activity that gave rise to the Police Hall of Fame case that was tried and that counsel has referred to, and that was the unfortunate genesis of this very different kind of ordinance.
Well, how do you get at that? How does a municipality get at that?
Get at fraud? Your Honor,
prosecute each one?
Your Honor, that's how fraud has historically been dealt with in fundraising activities as well as anything else.
Well, the laws... you implied before, if you did not say, that I could put up a sign, anyone can put up a sign, saying keep out or posted or no solicitors or whatnot, and then they must stay out, is that right?
As long as the village has an appropriate kind of trespass ordinance, which all villages that I know of do.
The combination of the ordinance, the action of the municipality, plus the sign. Now, in other words, I can deprive you, or you can deprive me, of this First Amendment right you claim, and we can do that individually, but we can't do it collectively.
Oh, yes, that's right, Your Honor, and that's precisely the kind of distinction that was first made in Martin against Struthers, and that I believe Your Honor's opinion in Hines against Oradell adhered to, and indeed in between the Rowan against the United States Post Office, in which this court upheld a restriction of just that kind,
but
in
the,
which citizens could
the
make
citizen
the judgment.
But the citizen had to take an affirmative step there, didn't he? Just he had to notify the post office that he didn't want mail from the Acme Publishing Company, for example.
Yes, Your Honor. And there's nothing wrong with requiring that
well,
kind of evidence.
What's the difference in the constitutionality of doing it individually and collectively?
The difference, Your Honor, is the question of who does it individually and who does it collectively. When it's done individually, no matter by how many individuals, the individuals are making a judgment for themselves. When it's done collectively in the way that the village of Schaumburg has sought to do it, it's a sort of big brother activity that operates whether or not the individuals who also have First Amendment rights, the individuals have First Amendment rights to hear messages, they also have First Amendment rights to communicate their complaints. That's, as I say, the other side of both coins that Citizens for a Better Environment is engaged in. That's a very different kind of standard.
Reverse the presumption you're talking about and say that soliciting is prohibited except on property where there is a soliciting permitted sign?
I think that would present very serious constitutional problems, and the reason that I think that is that that you would have to have coupled with that somehow the notion that all people are presumed to know the law in a very literal sense as distinct from the theoretical sense in which the law usually treats with it. Unless you can show that, I don't like to get back into the preceding case which dealt with intention, but the notion that somehow people are presumed to know that an ordinance requires that if they want to be informed, they've got to post a sign.
Martin ordinance presumed that they knew that they had to know the law, that they would have to post a no soliciting.
Yes, Your Honor, because when you deal with First Amendment rights, you have to have narrowly drawn statutes. I would suggest that a presumption that flip-flops in the manner that Your Honor has suggested
would be a serious
impediment.
Where is the First Amendment right to the unregulated solicitation of funds?
But Your Honor, I must return to the refrain that what we're dealing with here is not the solicitation of funds in a vacuum. What we're dealing with here is the solicitation of funds that's irrevocably coupled with and tied to the exercise of speech rights. It's not that they're not raising funds to go to the Caribbean. They are raising funds so that they can deliver messages dealing with the environment, so that they can engage in educational activities dealing with the environment, so they can take complaints dealing with the environment, so they will know what kind of positions to take in litigation, in connection with legislation. All those things are not simply the raising of funds. They're the raising of funds which necessarily carries with it the tie-in with the exercise of First Amendment rights. That's a notion that this court has accepted ever since the Jehovah's Witness cases. The Jehovah's Witness cases made the strong point that that it is the poor organization, the one that is most often in need of the use of funds to exercise First Amendment rights, to whom this privilege is the most important. And that's what we're dealing with here. Yes, Your Honor.
You rely heavily on the connection in your type of organization between the what you might call the propaganda activities and the solicitation activity. Do you, in effect, concede that pure solicitation has no First Amendment protection? In other words, say the American Red Cross or somebody went around, all it wanted to say was, please give some money to the Red Cross. Is there any First Amendment protection for that message?
Your Honor,
You seem to be conceding there is none, if I understand your argument, because you rely entirely on a quite different argument.
I'm pleased to say that I don't have to confront that one. I think that's a more difficult one.
Well, you may, under Mr. Justice White's hypothetical, because the ordinance could possibly have been written to say you can say anything you want to, but don't solicit any funds at all, period.
But it is not...
Then you'd say your kind of organization has a right to object to it, but maybe the Red Cross or somebody else wouldn't.
It's my view, and this is how I tried to respond to Chief Justice Berger's question. It's my view that the delivery of the message that has to do with the traditional charity itself contains the ingredients of speech. It contains implicitly, at least, the fact that you contribute to the American Heart Association and part of the activity that they engage in, or the Boy Scouts or the Red Cross.
One, the asking for funds is itself First Amendment protected, and secondly, that you need to do that in order to support your other message.
Yes, Your Honor.
You wouldn't say that if I went around and said, I'm the boy next door, I want to go to college, would you make a small donation? Or you know me, I work down at the filling station, I've written a heck of a book and I want to publish it. How about helping me out? I'm just raising money to publish my book.
I think that's your freedom of speech. Whether the
so you say the answer is the same.
Yes.
Anybody who came would certainly have protection if he came and said, oh, by the way, I want to run for office. How about $5?
Yes, the running for office I think is clearly what this court's teachings have been at least at a minimum that social, political, religious activities. I'm not sure that we have to confront for purposes of this case
the
purely
self-serving
one.
I want to run for office or I want to go to college and help me along. I have a few magazines I'm selling.
I would not necessarily espouse that person's kind of First Amendment.
He's trying to achieve the very same ends. But instead of asking to give for a gift, he's asking for he's going to give you something for it.
I think, Your Honor, that issue deals more in the area of what has been characterized as commercial speech, on which this court has told us that First Amendment rights extend, but not necessarily to the same extent. And that's why I say I don't think that we have to cope with it at this point. I have, by leave of court, agreed to give a portion of the time to counsel for one of the amici curiae that have filed in this court, and therefore I'm relinquishing the balance of my time for that purpose. Thank you very much.
Mr. Yarmolinsky.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I propose to argue briefly 2 points. First, the ordinance is constitutionally invalid not only as to so-called advocacy organizations, but also as to more traditional charitable organizations. Second, in assessing the constitutionality of this ordinance, one must bear in mind the developing patchwork of other local ordinances not addressed to interests appropriate for local government to protect, and having a particularly chilling effect on the fundraising efforts of national voluntary charitable organizations. Now,
national?
National.
Why do you limit it to national?
I don't limit it to national. I'm simply speaking on behalf of a number of major national voluntary charitable organizations. I suppose, regional organizations, organizations which have to deal with large numbers of local regulations, which aren't simply soliciting in one area and therefore can adopt their solicitation practices to the needs of that area or of that municipality. Now, the court below declined to decide the reasonableness of the 75% requirement as applied to solicitation by traditional charitable organizations. The Amici for whom I'm arguing include the major national traditional organizations, and the arbitrary percentage limit puts, I submit, an unconstitutional burden on these organizations. Solicitation, including door-to-door solicitation, is essential to the continuing existence of these organizations. And what these organizations are engaged in is communicating public needs, whether advocacy or more traditional needs, whether they're preaching environmentalism or whether they're selling Girl Scout cookies or soliciting money for the Heart Fund. Solicitation involves their right to communicate, and it involves the citizens' right to receive that communication. And I would even go so far as to suggest that on the citizen's side, contribution is a form of association. There have been several references to Martin B. Struther, which recognized the distinction and said that the community can't substitute its judgment for the judgment of the householder. The judgment in this case that spending 25% of contributions on what the village authorities deem to be administrative costs is a bar to solicitation. I do think one has to distinguish commercial organizations. That distinction was recognized in Schneider and other cases. One has to distinguish governmental organizations, which can call on the taxing power. The Amici for whom I'm speaking, in many cases, would have difficulty surviving under the regulations governing commercial peddler's licenses. Now, I suggest that there are two reasons why the ordinance is an unreasonable restriction as applied to all charitable organizations, not just to advocacy organizations. The proportion of contributions that goes for fundraising is largely beyond organization control, beyond the control of the organization that's doing the fundraising. For example, some kinds of causes tend to attract large contributions from comparatively well-off people. Other kinds tend to attract small contributions from lower-income people. Some solicitation goes on in areas where population is concentrated, others in areas where it's less concentrated. There are more popular causes, less popular, better established, less better established, and there's even the question of weather, which influences the ability of solicitors to cover ground. We don't suggest the charitable organizations for whom I'm speaking use the cloak of charity to mask a commercial purpose. Quite the contrary. They need the cloak of charity because it's the only cloak they've got. Now, secondly, ordinances like this one imply a judgment about the means by which the organization should pursue charitable purposes, a judgment which we submit is beyond the power of government and certainly beyond the power of local government. How much the organizations give directly to beneficiaries, how much they spend on what local authorities deem to be administrative purposes. And certainly that determination involves a degree of discretion which seems inconsistent with cases in which the court has been concerned about the degree of discretion that's accorded to local authorities.
So, Mr. Yarmolinsky, you would say that if the ordinance required proof that some of the money went to the purported charitable purposes, it would still be invalid?
I would say that if it required that proof for an initial period, it would certainly be invalid, because we all know of cases in which validly charitable organizations must spend even more than they can raise and borrow money in order to survive for an initial period which may run more than a fiscal year.
What if the ordinance required that the after the first year of operations that the solicitor hand out a card saying that in the past fiscal year X percent was devoted to administrative expense and X percent was devoted to the ultimate purposes?
I believe that that would almost certainly be a valid constitutional ordinance. I would raise at least a question as to the appropriate jurisdiction to enact such an ordinance, and that goes to my patchwork point, which I had mentioned earlier, because there is a good deal of discretion and a good deal of flexibility involved in defining what is an administrative expense. There's an extensive footnote in our brief on the difference between the 1974 position of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the 1977 position, which happens to work against the major charitable organizations which I represent. And I simply suggest, perhaps not as a matter of constitutional law, that if you told me that such a provision was being enacted by the states or by the Congress, it seems to me that would be a very happy solution to what is a real problem and what involves, as any case reaching this court does, a balancing of interests.
How about a statement that as a solicitor of CBE, I receive $8.50 an hour for my work? Would that...
I can't see any constitutional objection to that requirement. Again, unless it gets into the patchwork problem.
Unless it gets into...
Into the patchwork problem. Problem of how do you get the word around to all your solicitors. The problem of door-to-door solicitation, and I just take 30 seconds on this point, because I think it is a First Amendment issue, it's increasingly difficult for even the largest and best established organizations not only to maintain their operations, but to collect the money that they need, the part of the money they need to collect from door-to-door solicitation, because you can't get the solicitors, because people are unwilling to open their doors at night, because they're not home, the members of the household are not home during the day, because you have two wage earner households, so that what we are dealing here is an economic problem that I suggest takes on First Amendment dimensions.
How about a limitation that such solicitations could be made only between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m.?
I would think that that would probably be an unreasonable provision because it would not appear to be related to safety or privacy.
Why not?
Between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m.?
Yes. After dark, people are a little more apprehensive about...
I thought you said could be made only between 7 and 9 p.m.
The solicitation would be only between those 2 hours when presumably the man of the house is home and the people are still awake and it isn't too late.
Well,
to
I guess I was thinking of it the other way around.
No,
that it was more dangerous to entertain solicitors after dark than before dark. I think there would be a question of the reasonableness of that requirement, and it would be a close question. I see that my time
has
expired.
But your basic First Amendment argument, I take it, is that there is underlying First Amendment argument to go out and abroad and solicit support, both financial and all other areas of support, from all persons except those who forbid it in some way.
Yes, but only, Mr. Chief Justice, on behalf of charities,
yes.
Not by the person who's putting himself through college.
Not the way they do it at the airport, where the solicitors are soliciting largely for themselves.
Well, I won't comment on
it. What's the matter with the individual putting himself through college?
Because...
Or getting money to publish his book. He thinks he will really educate the public.
Well, I believe, Mr. Justice White, that this is, again, one of those balancing questions. We do not permit the...
You'd balance him out.
I suspect that you would balance him out.
Well, the First Amendment doesn't refer especially to charities, does it?
No, but the First Amendment has been restricted, has been interpreted not to be a completely unrestricted opportunity. After all, this court doesn't, this court permits individuals to put out signs saying, don't talk to me, don't knock on my door. That is a restriction on the First Amendment right, but it is regarded as a reasonable restriction. It might be argued that to deny tax exemption to the contributions to an individual, as the Congress has done, except under very limited circumstances, is a restriction on First Amendment rights, but I don't think that challenge would get very far. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Yamalinsky.
Mr. Chief Justice, I think it's quite clear from the remarks of my opponents that they think the charities are entitled to some specific protection which I do not read in the First Amendment. They make an assumption that the First Amendment gives an unrestricted right to solicit funds. I read nothing in the First Amendment or any of the cases that this Court has decided which can lead to that conclusion. Mr. Yarmolinsky complains that the ordinance is invalid as to traditional charitable organizations. Not even the Seventh Circuit, whose opinion I disagree with almost 110%, was willing to go that far, and that issue is not before the Court. Mr. Yarmolinsky decries the possibility of a patchwork of ordinances. This nation is a patchwork of municipalities and states, each of which have local problems and local needs, which better ought to be addressed by those governments closest to them.
What would you say about an ordinance that's totally prohibited charitable solicitation in the village?
Your Honor, I don't find anything in the First Amendment that would prohibit that.
You think that ordinance would be valid, in other words?
Yes, sir, I do. I don't think it's necessary to decide that question here, but I think that what counsel is really seeking is an unbridled right to solicit because these are, quote, good causes. They may be fine causes, and I have nothing against the Heart Fund, the Cancer Group, the St. Jude's, the dozens who solicit in Schaumburg. I may not even have anything against CBE if I find out what it's
Girl
about.
Scout cookies, apparently.
Pardon me?
I guess the Girl Scouts can't sell
Girl Scouts are fine, Your Honor.
I don't see how they comply with the ordinance, though, because they got to pay for the cookies.
They do.
And those would be administrative expenses.
Well, they certainly...
Maybe you make an exception for them.
Yeah. Well, we don't make any exceptions, no, Your Honor.
It would follow from your position that an ordinance which prohibited absolutely and totally all door-to-door solicitation for any purpose would be valid. That would include commercial, which you said everyone agrees has somewhat less protection.
Your Honor, as far as the First Amendment was concerned, there might be other considerations.
Such as?
Well, I think if it was drafted in such a way as to make distinctions, but if it was an outright prohibition, I suspect it would probably not violate the First Amendment. I don't regard, in short, solicitation for funds alone as a prohibition of such solicitation as a violation of the First Amendment. I find nothing in any of the cases that would indicate that. And I think it's quite interesting that I've got at least a half a dozen briefs from the various amici, as well as Mr. Shader, and I find no cases in any one of them that goes that far. It's always solicitation coupled with something else. Our ordinance is not a prior restraint. Our ordinance doesn't care what your message is. God bless you with your message. But when you start asking for money, then we say that the community, through its local officials, have the right to make a decision. And I would point out, as I know your honors are well aware, that the Briard case said in substance that the community could substitute the collective judgment for that of the individual. And the mere fact that you post a sign that says no solicitors doesn't keep solicitors out. We had that no soliciting sign for 4 years in our ordinances before we adopted the present ordinance, which is here in contention. Because unfortunately, when solicitors work on a commission, they don't always pay attention to such signs, and unfortunately, the bewildered housewife, and I don't mean to paint a horrible picture here, but it's a terrible burden upon an individual housewife to have to go through the procedures, in Illinois at least, to file a complaint for trespass. I think it's unrealistic to say that the traditional remedies against fraud and trespass are sufficient to deal with this problem. In case of pure First Amendment freedoms, exercise of freedom of speech and freedom of religion, we certainly can say that that inconvenience is outweighed by the social benefits. But when the objective is to raise money, and most or a substantial portion of the money does not go to the charitable purpose, I suggest that the municipalities, in the interest of the public safety, are entitled to enact the kind of ordinances which we've enacted here without impinging upon the First Amendment. I ask the Seventh Circuit be reversed.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.